Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If you had to pick a favorite food that you probably shouldn't eat, but do anyway, what is it?
Spaghetti and meatballs. I love it.
From Arizona. That's a surprising...
Napolitano.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's true. I'm sorry. I forgot. They're sort of a myth.
Oh, yes. I would have thought that Big Sis loved apple slices and carrot sticks. Who would have guessed she'd like spaghetti and meatballs? Did you listen to that Stop the Music on the Savage Nation? You know, CNN, we know what it is. We all know it's a far-left organization with no ratings whatsoever. Okay, that's a given. But I'm renaming it GNN, Government News Network, because they're doing exactly what was done in the ex-Soviet Union by Izvestia and Pravda, owned by the government. They are nothing but an outlet for government propaganda. So now they're trying to humanize Janet Napolitano, who refuses to enforce immigration law, who is friendly to the swarm of illegals coming across the border, who does things that the average American cannot comprehend are in favor of homeland security. So they put her on CNN, and listen to the question again.
If you had to pick a favorite food that you probably shouldn't eat, but do anyway, what is it?
Spaghetti and meatballs. I love it.
From Arizona. That's a surprising...
Napolitano.
Yes, well, that's true. I'm sorry.
Can you believe this passes for CNN News in this day and age when we're being overrun by Muslim radicals in this country? Muslim radicals like Ralph who want to build a victory mosque at Ground Zero. Now, let me take the biggest threat from the top down, and that's the cultural threat, the sweeping away of hundreds of years of American tradition built upon 1,000 years of Christian tradition being swept aside by the vermin left in this country, by the liberal elite who run this country, and by the Muslim fanatics who are acting like lambs when most of them are lions in disguise. Now, today, something happened interesting in France. You say France, you think liberal France. It is. France is, by any definition, a liberal nation. The French Senate passed a ban on the full Muslim veil. French Senate has voted overwhelmingly for a bill banning the burqa-style Islamic veil everywhere, from post offices to streets, in a final step toward making it a law. The Senate in France voted 2-4-6-1 on Tuesday in favor of the bill, which is already passed in the lower chamber of the National Assembly. Now, you would think that CNN would cover that to show you the threat of Islam to the European, even the liberal European, has awakened to the threat of Islam. But not here in America. They're talking about spaghetti and meatballs. You know, there's an interesting article today in the New York Post by Michael Goodwin entitled "Extremist Lion in Moderate Lamb's Clothing." And he opens like this. He's talking about Ralph, the operator at the Ground Zero Mosque. I'm not calling him Imam. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I'm not saying imam anymore. It's not English, number one. Number two, the guy's a PR agent. So stop with the imam jargon already. Stop already with the saluting him. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? Take a look at his properties in New Jersey and see what they're doing with his New Jersey, the tenants are saying about this imam, Ralph. Anyway, Goodwin starts like this. He says, there's a story about a MIDI zookeeper who insists he can get the lion and lamb to lie down together each night. An incredulous visitor asks how. Easy, the zookeeper says. I just bring in a new lamb each morning. Faisal Abdul Rauf, he says, reminds me of the zookeeper. I'm not sure he would get the joke or even realize it is a joke, and that's the problem. And he goes into what this character has said over the years. He says one thing to American liberal idiots, the useful idiots like Bloomberg, which proves beyond a reasonable doubt that a billionaire can also be a fool. And then he says something else in Arabic when he's touring with his co-religionists. And one of the things that this Ralph character said over the years was heard the other night at the Council on Foreign Relations, a left-wing front group. Now, this is a left-wing front group, CFR, it always has been. But even they have a few people in it who understand the danger of Islam, that Islam poses to the West, right? So he writes that the most revealing moment came the other night when Council President Richard Haass asked the overarching question of why Muslims make up nearly all of the world's most dangerous terrorists. The Ralph character choked on the answer. He talked about a witch's brew of political and religious issues, but he started with a predictable non sequitur, the Israeli-Palestinian standoff. Then it was off to citing American troops in Muslim lands, the alienation of Muslim minorities in Europe and the U.S. And then he said there were church-state issues in Muslim nations, and that was it. Not once did Ralph express any gratitude for the millions of Muslims liberated from their tyrannical co-religionists by the West, or for the sacrifice of American blood and treasure. Nor did he make an effort to explain the habits of suicide bombers, beheadings, and terror attacks on civilians around the globe by Islamic fundamentalists. So there it is. French Senate passes ban of full Muslim veils. And Raouf, who poses as a lamb, is in fact a lion. And our director of Homeland Security goes on CNN and is asked what her favorite food is and laughs at her own description of it being spaghetti and meatballs. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. I'll open myself up to callers on the Savage Nation, the phone number being 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Today being Tuesday, and part of the new American format on the Savage Nation, I want to do a little bit about books or, you know, movies or whatever, and I have a real treat for you today on the program, and that is some original recordings of the great American writer Jack Kerouac, dating back to 1959, which we'll get to a little later. Remember last week when I played some of Henry Miller, how you were touched by it? Well, today we're going to do some Jack Kerouac. On Tuesday, that's what the day is. Now let's go to some of the tape I have. We have Ralph speaking at the CFR and the Ground Zero Mosque controversy. Do we have that exact one when he's asked about that? If not, we don't. We have another one of Ralph. We do have the one I asked for. Can we ask for 26, please? This is Ralph.
In recent days, some people have asked, is there really a need for an Islamic community center in Lower Manhattan? Is it worth all this firestorm? The answer, ladies and gentlemen, is a categorical yes. Why? Because this center will be a place for all faiths to come together as partners, as stakeholders, in mutual respect. It will bring honor.
All right, knock it off. I've heard this crap before. Hey, Ralph, why don't you work and lobby for a church in Saudi Arabia? If you really cared about interfaith cooperation, if you really wanted all faiths to come together, you use your genius and your golden tongue to talk to King Faisal about permitting Bibles to be brought into Saudi Arabia. I don't buy a word of this operator. Not one word out of this operator's mouth is trustworthy, okay? That's my opinion, and I don't care what your opinion is. How's that? Michelle in Indiana, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. I care about your opinion. What is it?
Yeah, Ralph sounds like Oksana, and I'm feeling like Mel Gibson. Only I've never
been. Wait, Ralph sounds like Mel Gibson's wife?
No, yes, Raouf. He's all calm and collected, and he knows the passion we're feeling, and I see.
He's trying to provoke anger to sound reasonable.
Yeah, he reminds me of the tape, you know, of Oksana.
I see. So he's provoking America into rage. And he continues to speak in this calm con man voice. Is that it?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? He's entitled to his game playing, and I'm entitled to my rage. How's that? Does that work for you?
Yeah, that works.
Good. Thank you. Now, look, I have another good tape for you. I have to take my hat off to Rudy Giuliani, who I have not been a big fan of. He did great work when he was mayor. I didn't like anything he did ever since mayorship, and I've said that. But He's really the only national politician next to the Newt Gingrich who's come out on the right side of this Ground Zero mosque issue. Okay, listen to clip one.
If we move from that location, the story will be that the radicals have taken over the discourse. The headlines in the Muslim world will be that Islam is under attack. And I'm less concerned about the radicals in America than I'm concerned about the radicals in the Muslim world.
Hold on. So in other words, that was a threat. I've seen this before during the 60s. The leftists would threaten that if they didn't get their way on campuses, they couldn't guarantee that there wouldn't be violence from the extremists amongst them. That goes back to the Black Panthers. Oh, well, you know, I'm a reasonable man, but we can't control those Black Panthers, or we can't control the bomb throwers on the left. I wouldn't do it, but, you know, we can't guarantee the safety of the campus building. Hey, Ralph, I don't know who's advising you, but you better get another script, because none of it is playing out in America. Even a moderate like Giuliani answers you. Listen to clip two.
You know, I analyzed this imam's history pretty carefully. And I hate to simplify it, but it's the only way to do it. There's the good imam and the bad imam. The good imam is about reconciliation. He's about being open and transparent about what he's doing and how he's doing it. Then there's the bad imam who said America is an accessory to September 11. America has more Muslim blood on its hands than vice versa. He can't condemn Hamas as a terrorist group. And he will not be transparent about where he's getting the money, how he's getting the money. And has virtually not been open at all about this. And now we have the imam who tells us if he doesn't get his way, there could be a significant and very dangerous violence.
Good for you, Mr. Giuliani. You know, you're an ex-prosecutor. And now you're speaking for the average American who knows exactly what this man is trying to do to this country. He knows exactly to this nation. Notice that is something that Ralph has achieved. I'll tell you what Ralph has achieved, which is the exact opposite of what he thinks he's achieved. Ralph has now blurred the line between extremists in the Muslim world and the Muslim world in general. We, the American people, now don't know the difference. I'll be right back.
Savage.
He seems, by his actions, to be more interested in confrontation than in healing. Actually, if you go on with the rest of that quote, I was talking about the Pope and the issue that he faced several years ago with a convent outside of Auschwitz. There was a convent there, perfect right to have it. Many people in the Jewish community felt it was insensitive. The Pope and the nuns could have said, we're going to stay there. We have a right to do it. Let's have that confrontation. Bring it on. The Pope, being a man of healing, wanting not to make things more painful for people that have already had way too much pain, said, let's withdraw. Let's pull it back.
See, Giuliani is a clear thinker. This is the Giuliani we all loved way back when, before he tried to make it on the national stage and listen to the idiots who misadvised him and told him to play the liberal Giuliani, and he lost. You know, he says there's a good imam and a bad imam. I say there's a real Giuliani and a liberal Giuliani. And the real Giuliani is the leader that we all want. So the day he gets rid of those schmucks who advised him when he ran for the presidency, the better off this country will be, because we need a real prosecutor who understands what organized crime is. And let me tell you something. There's not a big difference between organized crime and some aspects of some organized religions. All right? Do I have to spell it out for you? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Michael Savage. I don't know if that's my name anymore. I don't know what my name is. So we have Big Sis, the Department of Homeland Security. Instead of worrying about Imam Ralph and his background and who's funding him and whether it's coming from enemies of America, she's talking about spaghetti and meatballs with another fatso on CNN. It's unbelievable to me. Now, you know, being fat is not a crime. Let me tell you something. It's not even immoral. But you know something? I'll tell you a little story about fatness. I'll tell you a little story. I remember when I was a young guy and slim and in great shape, I was traveling the country in some capacity in a textbook company. And there was a very nice lady who traveled from the publishing company with me. And I went on the road, and I was a sensitive young guy in some ways. I don't know, as I gave a presentation, and one of the school board people was a son of a gun. Evil, mean, went out of his way to nail me on everything I said. He was just trying to make me squirm. I was 22 years old, and it made me very uncomfortable, you know, try to screw up my presentation to the school board. And this woman came to my defense, and she said to him, you know, you take a look at your stomach, she said to him, hanging out of your over your belt. She said, there's something about slovenliness and a lack of character. That's what she said to him. So I never forgot that. You know, time and gravity catches up with all of us. I don't mean to get sidetracked, but, you know, life is full of surprises. But when we'd have a trillion-dollar or a multi-trillion-dollar organization called the Department of Homeland Security, run by a woman as incompetent as Janet Napolitano, who has failed on every attempted terrorist event in her entire tenure, and she still has her job, that says more about Obama than it does about her. And it says more about the American people and that Dutchman who flew across the aisles and stopped the underwear bomber. Remember, every one of the attempted terrorist attacks was stopped not by the Department of Homeland Security, not by the FBI, not by the U.S. military, but by ordinary citizens. That shows you the shape this country is in, the mess we are in under the professor. The professor. San Diego Lorenzo, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much. And I was a lifelong liberal. I was a lifelong radical almost. And when Obama came in, I thought the world was going to change. But let me tell you, I used to listen to you just for laughing. And everything you said came true. It was all true. They all were lies, prima donnas. How could anyone want to allow a mosque to be built on that site?
Well, I would say if the imam, so-called imam, which I don't see any religion in him, I see nothing but a PR agent with a golden tongue, it has backfired on him because he has now blurred the distinction, as I said earlier, between the radicals in Islam and the so-called moderates like him. He's made most Americans who are looking at this situation now. Would you agree with that?
I would agree.
And Lorenzo, you know, I got to tell you this. I'm going to send you, I don't have it now. You are such a lucky man. If you'll stay in the line, we're going to get your name. I'm going to put it in a list. I'm giving you a free copy of my new book, Trickle Up Poverty. I'm only 3 weeks away from launch. You say, what does this have to do with the imam? Because I'm trying to tell you that my book is not just about the economic downfall of America under Obama. But when I say trickle up poverty, I mean he has impoverished the military. He has impoverished our national security. He has tried to destroy NASA. He's tried to destroy our nuclear stockpile. I'm the only author in the world who has it all documented in Trickle Up Poverty. You could only buy it on Amazon right now, soon in every store in the country.
Savage.
But it's not an enemy like Nazism and communism in the sense that it is a worldwide conflagration. It can create horrible attacks, maybe worse than Nazis or communists, like September 11 was the worst attack in our history. But it's not an all-encompassing enemy. And therefore, we have to be able to deal with it with strength, but we also have to be equally willing to give attention to the issues with Asia, the issues with Africa, the issues with Europe, South America.
That's Giuliani talking about the mosque at Ground Zero. Listen to 06.
If you had told me, you know, 4 years ago, someone wants to put a mosque up near Ground Zero, I would have told you that 80, 90% of the family members would be very offended by that and very hurt by that for a whole host of reasons, having nothing to do with Islamophobia, but having all to do with how they feel this is sacred ground, that a Muslim center there would not be appropriate. Someplace else would be perfectly appropriate.
Right. So this is a provocation on the part of the provocateur, Rauf, who did this on purpose. He wants anger. He wants to try to make his opponents look bad while he's trying to position himself as looking like the reasonable one. But it's backfired because the more we hear this silver-tongued character, the less he is liked. The more we learn about his dealings as a landlord in New Jersey, the more we understand that there's something more than meets the eye to this character named Rauf. The more we learn about the developer, the Arab developer, and his incidents with the law, the more we know that this whole group, from top to bottom, needs to be investigated by the State Attorney General of New York State, Cuomo. And if Cuomo doesn't act, Cuomo's never going to go any further in politics. Giuliani came out and acted because he understands that this issue is not only one about politics. This is about the very heart and soul of America. And if Cuomo really cared about New York or America, he'd step out from behind his advisors and he'd say, you know what, there's enough evidence right now for me to act because I read in the New York Post that the original owner of that building, where they want to build a mosque, which they're now calling a community center, the owners were offered $20 million for it or something more than that, and they sold it for $4.1 million to this group of Arabs. Something's wrong with that picture. Why would they sell it for 25 cents on the dollar? Was some money passed under the table? As the Attorney General in the state of New York, I have an obligation to investigate this. End of story. Half of them would disappear. I can guarantee you half of them would run out of the country. I can guarantee it as I say that. Now, here's something more controversial. Again, just popped up. You know, Harry Reid is a far-left radical. He's sort of like Nancy Pelosi's enabler. He is almost like Nancy Pelosi's skirt, or shall I say Nancy Pelosi's pants. Now Harry Reid has been trying to pose as someone who is moderate because he's running for a re-election and he's in great trouble. Angle is going to beat him in Nevada. He came out minutes ago, that Harry Reid has just added the DREAM Act to a defense policy bill the Senate will take up next week. Now, what is the DREAM Act? The DREAM Act will grant amnesty to illegal aliens who go to college or serve in the military. The DREAM Act is amnesty by another name. It's called the Development, Relief, and Education of Alien Minors Act. In other words, it's a way to get minorities who are Hispanic to vote for Democrats. So Reid now showed his true colors. He said, I know we can't do comprehensive immigration reform. He said, so we're going to do this. And Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell called Reid's decision needlessly controversial. The so-called Senate will need 60 votes to take up the bill next week, and Harry Reid said he doesn't know if he has enough votes. Let's hope that the Democrats understand they're going to be thrown out and never be seen again if they try to grant amnesty to illegal aliens of any age. So that's new news for you. Harry Reid adds controversial immigration measure to defense bill, and he ties it to a defense policy bill, knowing that defense bills are sacrosanct, and that defense bills often pass with bipartisan support. And he knows that not only did he add this to the defense authorization bill, but he also added the repeal of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell to the defense bill. So they're trying to wreck the military on several different levels at once. A, flooding them with overt active homosexuals, and B, trying to flood the military with illegal aliens at the same time. This is your Democrat at work. This is your wonderful, patriotic, loyal Democrat Party at work, catering to non-citizens. New York, Artie, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to thank you. You were the first one that ever made the statement you didn't like calling this man an imam. And that has been bugging me for the longest time. Everybody giving him...
Yeah, they get down on their hands and knees. Imam this, imam might be... I'm sick of the imam garbage. Let's stop with the imam. He's a PR agent.
New York and the American people, that's all he is.
Let me tell you something. An imam belongs inside a mosque preaching religion. That's an imam. Not a PR agent traveling the world raising money from nefarious sources to build a victory mosque. That's not an imam to me.
No, this man doesn't...
And by the way, I'm very fair in this because I've said the same thing about liberal rabbis, by the way. You've heard me say that about liberal rabbis, Artie.
Yes, I have.
What does the word rabbi mean? When you're a kid, oh, Rabbi Schmendelmuck. There's Rabbi Schmendelmuck. And then you grow up and say, what does rabbi mean? The guy went to school for 2 years to learn how to pray. So what, I'm supposed to respect him? That means he's a genius?
To deserve people's respect.
Yeah, earn your respect. Then I'll call you something. I earned my PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. I published a dissertation that I had to defend. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to hear. And it's the same with Reverend Sharpton. Where did Reverend Sharpton get his divinity degree? Do you know, Artie?
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you love when he goes on CNN or Fox News? Reverend Sharpton, what is it you think about this? Reverend Sharpton, what do you think? What do you mean, Reverend? What is he, in a church with a collar? You know what I'm saying? Where did he get his divinity degree? I never got an answer to that. I've been asking for years. Thanks for the call. Next case. Let's move on. Alabama, Sue, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you for taking my call. When you said that the CNN should be renamed GNN,
yes,
it reminded me of a series of books that I read by Tim LaHaye and Jerry to think that Obama is the way it was portrayed in the book, that the liberal media, that they only hear what they want to hear and they only report what they want to report.
Yeah, but why would she go out of the way on CNN to interview Napolitano of Homeland Security, and instead of asking her about the threat of Islam, what does she think about the mosque, What does she think about the French banning veils? Why don't we do it here? Should we do it here? And what's your favorite dish, spaghetti and meatballs? This is right out of the Soviet playbook.
Yes, it is, and it's kind of scary.
Sue, I know several individuals who've come here from the ex-Soviet Union 20 years ago or more. Every one of them is living in fear that America is becoming increasingly like the ex-Soviet nations that they fled. Do you know that, Sue?
I do know that.
And do you know that most of them tell me that I'm 100% right in naming Obama a naked Marxist? I know that there's been a lot of revisionists lately, apologists for Obama, who claim to be conservatives. He's not a Marxist. He's not really a Marxist. He is a Marxist. You know, if it walks like one, talks like one, everything the man has done or tried to do is classic, big state, totalitarian Marxism. And if he can't get it all done at once, he does it in stages. He is a Marxist, as I disclose in Trickle Up Poverty. And by the way, Sue, I'm sending you a free copy. Stay in the line. Not today. In 3 weeks, we're going to send it out to you. I'm so excited by what's going on in the country right now. We're so close to the elections. We're all waiting with bated breath to see if all of the prognostications are correct. I am not as optimistic as some, and I've said so long before the other Doubting Thomas has joined the parade. But the fact is, unless the Democrats do something very dramatic to win the hearts and minds of the blue-collar white man and white woman, shall I be more blunt? I can't. Obama has finally awakened the sleeping giant of the pickup driving white male and white woman, many of whom voted for him because they were so disenchanted with Bush, because they knew Bush was a liar and they knew that McCain was nothing but Bush prime. So they figure, you know what? First of all, they're not racist. They figured they'd try even a black man who looked like he had something new to offer, some honesty. They found out he's a fraud. They found that he's a faker. They found out he's an imposter. And they're going to go to the Republican side, we think. And the fact of the matter is, they're not going to go to the Republican side, we think. They're going to go to the Tea Party candidate, we know. That's because they've come to finally understand that Michael Savage is a prophet, who, when he entered radio in 1994, started to say to you, watch out, it's a two-party system with one P under the two shells. And Savage called it a Republicrat nation or a Democrat nation. Remember in 94? Before the others even understood what I was saying, they were all on either one side or the other. And then I defined myself as an independent conservative, and others have come along, God bless them. They're all welcome in the big tent of the concept of the independent, which is great. It's long history. Who has to review it? I don't need the credit for it. Truthfully, I don't care anymore. The point is, the average American who is politically aware, who has the capacity to even analyze for themselves, they know the Republicans are the same as the Democrats to about the 90th percentile, maybe 98 percentile points. They're almost identical. There's almost no difference. If you put the Republicans in power today, by and large, they'd be the same as the Democrats. They're all pandering to the illegal alien. I mean, you name it, they're there. The only differential is the Tea Party candidates, who are giving the old guard Republicans a real run for their money, and they're the only hope for the salvation of America. Period, end of story. You know? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. This is FM Mike. Shifting character again, form shifting on the program in a few seconds. Into another form in another place. Joking around now. French Senate passes ban of full Muslim veils. I wonder what the ACLU would say about that. That even liberal France has said, you know what? You know that the veil is not even required in the Quran? Do you understand how stupid you are as a liberal? You stupid liberals are so gullible. I don't know how you get up in the morning. I mean, I understand most of you are on medication. I know that. I've met a lot of you. And you're nice people. In fact, if I went somewhere to a dinner, I'd like to be around you guys if we didn't talk politics. You're fun-loving people. You know how to have a good time. You know literature. You know movies. You're up on everything that's culturally significant in your own thinking, so long as it meets the doxies of your own deficiencies. But you are so naive when it comes to the survival of yourself, your family, and your nation that you shouldn't even be able to vote. Here we have a liberal nation called France that understands that the burqa-style Islamic veil is not even in the Quran, and the only people, because they're not trying to become French, they're trying to drag France back 500 years into the Dark Ages. So they say, you know what? You're in France. It's an oppressive thing for a woman to be put in that tent and make her walk around with her eyes hidden. Take it back to the country of origin. You're not going to do it on our streets. So the French passed the law. They have bigger nerve, more nerve than we do. Here we're so afraid that even a fraud that comes along with a golden tongue, calls himself Imam already, you're falling on your hands and knees. You're terrified of him. He's more frightening to you than Mussolini was to the World War II generation. He speaks, you, oh, everyone stop. Everyone stop what you're doing. There's Imam Rauf. The whole country should come to a halt because Imam Rauf has made a speech. Everyone stop where you are. Most important man in the Muslim world, Imam Rauf. You don't know who he is, never heard of him. 3 months ago, no one ever knew who the con man was, where he came from, what he did, where he studied, where he gets his money, where he's going to get his money, why he would provoke us like this. All of a sudden now, he's the leading spokesmouth for provocative Islam. So now we have three categories of Muslims. The moderate Muslim, who we've all been brainwashed into a saying. The radical Muslim, who we know bombed us on 9/11 and continues to try and take over the world. And then the provocative Muslim. Write it down because it'll be stolen by the end of the show. There's now a third category of Muslim, the provocative Muslim, the agent provocateur. I'll be right back. Savage.
Anyway, I wrote the book because we're all gonna die. In the loneliness of my life, my father dead, my brother dead, my mother far away, my sister and my wife far away. Nothing here but my own tragic hands that once were guarded by the world, a sweet attention, that now are left to guide and disappear their own way into the common dark of all our deaths. Sleeping in me raw, bed alone and stupid, with just this one pride and consolation, my heart broke in a general despair and opened up inwards to the Lord. I made a supplication in this dream.
You're listening to Jack Kerouac reading from On the Road on the Steve Allen Show from 1959. What you didn't know, he was a religious Christian, because the vermin like Allen Ginsberg and the other scum on the left try to paint him as an atheist and also a sexual deviant when he wasn't. He was molested by Allen Ginsberg when he was drunk and stoned, and consequently his life got totally destroyed. You don't know that Jack Kerouac, who was one of the great American writers, by the way, On the Road changed my life in very profound ways, which I'm not going to go into right now. I wouldn't be in the radio business if I didn't go on the road myself and leave New York when I did way back when. And one of the influences was Jack Kerouac in his book On the Road, okay? And how I wound up in San Francisco has a lot to do with some of his books. You know, talking about Deer on Mount Tamalpais and things of that nature. I couldn't believe it as I was stuck in New York City. And the reason I'm reading it to you now or playing it for you now and talking about Jack Kerouac On the Road is because the revisionist historians, the liars in the universities who still teach the beats to our children in the universities, leave out some of the most important and salient facts about Jack Kerouac, who was the smartest and the best of all of them. Kerouac hated Allen Ginsberg by the end. Kerouac hated the communist liberals by the end. Kerouac called them the devil by the end. Kerouac went down to Florida and lived in his mother's house, became a fanatic Republican at the end, and loved Nixon. Kerouac, remember, was a football star at Columbia University. He only got in with the wrong crowd, mainly the devil himself, Allen Ginsberg, who, as I say, seduced him when he was drunk and twisted his mind and twisted his life. But at the end, Kerouac, you youngsters who are still reading Kerouac, should know he was a loyal American, patriotic, and very Christian, and he believed in God. He was not just a drug addict who was an atheist and was on the road playing bongo drums looking for wild times. He said when the sun went down and he was out that night, he found God. And I thought I would play it for you now, that's all. Because, you know, religion comes to us in many different ways. Many different ways it comes to us through literature. For many of us, in fact, a knowledge of religion comes to us not from a house of worship. Many of us go to them because we have to, like a funeral or a wedding or a, you know, holiday. Well, we don't get anything out of it because most of the people who preach in these houses of worship, whatever the religion, don't have the spark. It's not that they're bad people. They don't have the spark. They may be very good people, in fact, but they don't have the spark. The spark is in other areas. It could be in a saxophone. It could be in a poem. could be on a talk radio. And so we get our recontact our connection to God in that way, because it makes us think again about who we are, what we are in the universe. So I don't want to get too into that right now, but that's why I said it's Tuesday, Liberal Day. I mean, Literature Day. Incidentally, right now, there are primaries going on in some very key areas. Tea Party favorites running against Republican old guard in two key races tonight. The final primary balloting before the November congressional elections. And it's amazing what is going on. And these high-profile races include the one in Delaware, where a nine-term Republican, middle-of-the-road check-pants Republican, Mike Castle, nine terms, is in a very tight contest tonight with political commentator and Tea Party favorite Christine O'Donnell in the GOP U.S. Senate primary. What's interesting is that Sarah Palin came out and supported O'Donnell. Tea Party Express gave $150,000 to her. But take a guess who stabbed her in the back. None other than the phony, fake conservative Bill Kristol. One of you say Bill Kristol to me, and I've hated this guy for years, because A, he'd be nothing without his father. He looks like a putz to me, to be honest. And yet he thinks he's a kingmaker. Bill Kristol comes out and attacks O'Donnell and says, go for the old line Republican. You hear this? This is an example of what we're facing. It's time for the weekly standard to fold up and call itself what it really is. And, it's just the nation with another rapper. There are many other races we're watching here tonight in the Savage Nation. If we get any early returns, we'll give them to you. I pray to God the Tea Party people win, because it's the only hope for this country. It's certainly not to be found in the two old parties. That's one man's opinion.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. Oh, it's a little haiku. In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age. That's Jack Kerouac.
Well, here I am, 2 p.m. What day is it?
Go ahead. Can you make it louder? I can't even hear the guy. All right, turn it off. You're promising one thing, you're giving me a horn. Can we start from the top? Can you give me something with a little talking, guys? I mean, is this what I'm going to get?
Early morning yellow flowers. Thinking about the drunkards of Mexico.
That's it? It's horrible.
The national scene. Late afternoon sun in those trees.
All right. I'm not a haiku lover. Forget about it. It's like sushi to me. You know what I mean? There's only so much you can take of it. This was popular at a certain point in the 60s in America. Really the late 50s, early 60s, like Mad Men time. And the author is far better than these haikus. Jack Kerouac, his great book On the Road, Subterraneans, many, many others. They influenced my life in so many ways. And I wouldn't be before this microphone today. I'd probably be a dentist with a heart transplant, playing the accordion at an old age home somewhere in Boca Raton. But lucky for me, I was influenced by the beatnik, so-called Jack Kerouac, who put me on the road. I had to get out of New York. I just had to. I mean, here I am, you know, I'm in New York and 300 other markets. I never really left New York in that regard. But the fact of the matter is, today we're talking about New York and America and the world with the Ground Zero Mosque and who this character is and why he keeps trying to provoke rage in everyone else. And then we played CNN interviewing the head of Homeland Security, who then, instead of asking her about the threat of Islam, the threat of radical Islam, or the threat of Islam itself and burqas being banned in France, the setup question is, what food do you like the best? We learn it's not apple slices, not carrot sticks, as Michelle would have approved, but spaghetti and meatballs. Who would have guessed? CNN became GNN, the government news network, and it's not a haiku, it's the Savage Nation, boom. So I just got an email from my good friend Peter Chalko, who goes back a long way as a fine writer in the health world, the alternative health world. And Peter just wrote me an email. He said, Mike, Michael, bravo on your capsule review commentary on Jack Kerouac. It's the best, most concise summary of the man I've ever heard, effectively countering the Ginsburg-initiated propaganda campaign that has lied about Kerouac since his death in 1968. Ginsburg cynically used Kerouac's talent to advance his own stupid career. Ginsburg even influenced his 1970s guru, Rinpoche, to name the literary school at Naropa Institute in Boulder, now fully accredited, the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics. Sickening. I know all of that. I really appreciate it, Peter. I don't know how many people still read these people. The only reason I had Kerouac today is that I'm asking this question. I wanted to show you how literature relates to the news. Here's the question. Here's today's question. What would beat icon Jack Kerouac think of a mosque at Ground Zero? Now give me a piece of saxophone. I'm going to ask the question again. Play the saxophone right at the end, guys. Can you pull that off? Here we go. Today's question. What would beat icon Jack Kerouac think of a mosque at Ground Zero? And it's okay. New York, Dana, WOR. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I run a bookstore in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It's a small bookstore, old, old, old. And we have a buyer who's quite liberal, and you've probably found this in the publishing world, that as a conservative, I'm certainly outnumbered in the publishing world. But we have to get your book in. Who's publishing it?
Well, Dana, I'm proud to tell you this book is going to be in every major bookstore chain in the country. I hope you can get it. It's William Morrow, one of the great publishers in America today. And I have good news for you and everyone else, Dana. I don't know if I'm allowed to disclose this. I hope I don't make a mistake and get slammed by somebody. They have advance orders for approximately 150,000 copies in hardcover, Dana. On October 5th, this book is going to be open broadly around America. I don't know how your buyer didn't tell you about it. Why, you asked for it and they didn't know about it?
I asked her and she didn't know about it, but this is not...
Oh, but she knew the teachings of Mao, huh? She can get you a few copies of that used? Can you get trickle-up poverty or anything like that? No, but we can get you some used copies of the teachings of Mao from Jerry Brown's cabinet.
It's the truth. And I wonder, too, there's so many good conservative writers that aren't getting a voice because I bet you the publishing houses aren't picking them up. And that's,
well, I don't know that that's true. There are some big monster conservative books out there. They come out, they sell hundreds of thousands or millions. You just don't read about it in the newspapers. But, Dana, it's like the Tea Parties. They were dismissed. They were castigated. They were put aside. They're now becoming the actual voice of the real America. And I think that the conservative books that are out there sell like crazy. The publishers know this. So as I say, trickle-up poverty, it'll be everywhere, Dana. You can get it through your book, whoever. I don't know how these things are done. But I told you about 150,000 have been ordered in advance. What would Kerouac think of a mosque at Ground Zero? Well, I'll make a guess. All of you literary students, Jack Kerouac is put forward as a beatnik, anti-establishment type. But he was a devout Catholic, number one, went to his grave believing in God, hated the beatniks at the end. He saw them for what they are. He called Allen Ginsberg a communist spy. He was a big supporter of the Vietnam War. He supported Richard Nixon. And sure, he was an alcoholic, and he died a sad life at a very young age in his mother's little house in Florida, but so what? What did that diminish him as a writer? He certainly influenced a man of my stature, meaning Michael Savage. If you say to me, well, what are the books that influenced you? On the Road has to be one of the most important influences at that time. Not today. I haven't read it in 30 years. I don't read it anymore. I make no reference to it. Today, I would probably laugh it off. you know, go out, you know, on the road. I mean, big deal. But look at the years I traveled in the Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, Palmyra. I mean, I did the on the road, but I did it in spades. I didn't just go around America in a broken Plymouth looking for a good time. I went all the way, my friends, you know, all the way out into the islands of the South Seas. But instead of just traveling, I was looking for plants that heal, and I published some very good work on that. I don't want to, again, you know, boast about it, but it's such a big part of my life, and it's all due to Jack Kerouac in some way. But there were earlier influences, but again, I don't want to talk too much about me. I mean, it's hard not to do in a radio show when you are the only one, you know, who's talking about yourself. What do you want me to do? Sacramento John, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Kerouac would be just totally angered about a mosque being built there. And yes, he was completely patriotic and would be.
So you know who I'm talking about. You read Jack Kerouac when you were younger?
Yeah, I'm only 33, and he totally influenced my life. I named my son Jack Kerouac.
Isn't that interesting? Oh, so you're a real fan. But I'm interested. You're a young guy. How do you come to know Kerouac?
Actually, it was from a Beastie Boys song. They said his name, and then I decided to read the book when I was.
Isn't that something? But you know that he was a devout Christian. And that he was a devout patriot, unlike the image that's offered up by the left-wing professors who try to have the children think he was some communist.
Yeah, no, it's totally portrayed not the way he would want. You know?
Good for you. Good for you, John. You got it exactly right. I thank you very much for calling the show. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. You want to call about the mosque and the imam, so-called. I don't call him imam. I call him Ralph. That's all. And I call him that for a reason. You know, if a man wants to go by his designated title, it should be reserved for the holy place that he preaches the holy books in my opinion. Otherwise, it's false deference to this man. What is he to me? What is he to me? To me, he's a con man, frankly. It's one man's opinion. He's a provocative Muslim who is looking to provoke rage in America to make himself look reasonable and make Muslims look like victims. So as I say, he created a third category of Muslims. You have the so-called moderate Muslim, you have the so-called radical Muslim, and now you have the well-established provocative Muslim, which is headed by the gentleman by the name of Ralph. He's achieved the exact opposite of what his handlers wanted him to achieve. The silver-tongued Ralph has had a long run of conning people, in my opinion, into thinking he was really a man of peace. You know, the interfaith dialogue stuff. We all heard it as kids. We looked, who cared? Never listened to it. We knew it was, you know, just window dressing. If you were a nice person, you know what? You got along with everybody, and you judged them not on their religion, but on who they were. And if you weren't a nice person, all of the double talk about interfaith dialogue, you know, didn't have much of a meaning. So the fact is that we didn't need it, most of us who were decent people. They were doing it for their own, you know, to get a grant and run around and give speeches everywhere. And speaking about grants and getting speeches, do I have a winner for you? You're not going to believe it. I've been saving it for the right moment. And I think this is as good a moment as any. Listen to this story. The federal government spent $830,000 of economic stimulus funds in 2009, sending a UCLA so-called research team to go to Africa to teach uncircumcised African men how to wash their genitals after having sex. I know you think I just made it up. You think it's a Kerouac haiku. It isn't. I'm going to read you the actual study. This is what your money was used for by Harry. This is what Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid did with your stimulus money. They got researchers to go to South Africa, and here's the study that they funded with $823,000 of tax money. The aim of the proposed feasibility study is to evaluate the feasibility and acceptability of a post-coital male genital hygiene procedure, which participants will be asked to practice immediately post-coitus or at least 12 hours after, close quote, reads the scientific abstract. Community-based HIV VCT South Africa is the name of the study. In other words, they're going to find out if men wash their genitals after sex. Now, the question is whether the lead investigator, Thomas Coates, participated in the hygienic procedure that he was recommending, or whether the professor's assistants went to South Africa to engage in the hygienic practice with the South African gentlemen who were engaging in such a sexual behavior. And this is what the NIH funded with it. The study says, we propose to evaluate the feasibility of a post-coital genital hygiene study among men unwilling to be circumcised in South Africa. And so they sent researchers over there to study the male genitals, I guess, after they had sex. After all, that's an important study to a guy like Thomas Coates at UCLA. The people who broke this story are at CNS News, and they asked Mr. Coates and the National Institute of Health the following. They said the Census Bureau says the median household income in the U.S. is $52,000. How would you explain to the average American mom and dad who make $52,000 per year that taxing them to pay for this grant was justified? So-called Professor Coates was unavailable for comment, and he directed the reporter to ask grant-related questions of his assistant, Daria Friedman, who did not respond. They then went to the National Institute of Mental Health, so-called, who also declined to respond to the reporter's question. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I would close down the National Institute of Mental Health, and I can guarantee you America's mental health would improve immediately. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I want to take 2 minutes out of this discussion of the Islamic assault upon Ground Zero here. And I want to take you to England, where a British teenager who sent a single email to the White House calling President Obama a name was visited by the FBI and banned from America for life. 17-year-old got drunk. He sent our thin-skinned president an email. He said, I don't remember exactly what I wrote as I was drunk, but I think I called Barack Obama a name that begins with P and ends with K. He said it was silly, the sort of thing you do when you're a teenager and you have had a few. FBI visits him. The police in England visit him. He's banned from America for the rest of his life. Now, I want to ask you something. Here's a simple question. We have millions of illegal immigrants flooding our nation, murdering people, robbing welfare, selling drugs, and the thin-skinned president has Homeland Security and the FBI crack down on a teenager who wrote him a nasty email. A teenager thousands of miles away calls him a name, and Obama says he can never come to America. Is this the America you wanted to live in with such a petty tyrant running it? You know, I'm banned from Britain because of petty martinets in Britain who lied about things I said. It's cost me dearly financially and emotionally in other ways, a time I'll never get back. I'm still banned from entering Britain. You could say, well, who cares? Well, I still care, and I'm still working on it. For those of you who have contributed to the fund, I want you to know that. We have people working day and night trying to appeal to the so-called Cameron government to end this blasphemy against me. But the fact is, here's a kid, 17 years old, gets drunk and sends one email to the thin-skinned president, and they say, you're banned from America for life? Do you think that that's something that would make you proud as an American? Tell me, do you think that there are people in America who are more dangerous than this teenager? Or shall I put it another way? Do you think that there are perhaps individuals of the Muslim persuasion in England who should be banned from America who are not on any such list? Why would they single out this kid? How is this possible that we've lost so many freedoms under Obama, the president, so rapidly? How is this possible that it's happening so rapidly? Because of the reasons I have told you about since before he was even president. I warned you a year ahead of everybody. You know I did, but you didn't listen. You never do. I'm like a family member who's always right.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. What news is coming out right now? I don't even, where can I begin? Let's see. Let's talk about Ralph, the Ground Zero mosque guy. He is called an imam. We have been searching many databases to find out where he studied religion. We see he studied science at various universities, and he has some degrees in science. But we have no record of where he got his imam title from. So if someone could help us with this, we'd be very happy to broadcast this throughout America, perhaps the world, so that we can all put this behind us. But I've never seen a so-called holy man spend so much time trying to provoke so many tens of millions of people into rage in my entire life. I've never seen it. That's why we're asking where he became an imam. So many other stories, so little time. New York court allows Indian cigarette tax. You talk about a scam. A New York appeals court on Tuesday lifted a temporary order blocking the state from collecting taxes on cigarettes sold by Native American stores to non-Indian customers. You want my opinion. Where does this come from that they don't have to pay taxes? How did this happen? You ask anyone who knows with the gambling thing. Are you kidding me? You talk about billions of dollars going down the drain, and why don't they want taxes? Why don't you go to the gambling industry and get some taxes there instead of trying to take it out of the behind of the middle class in the country? You ever see anything like this? Now they're selling cigarettes. They don't pay taxes on it either because of some alleged injustices 10,000 years ago. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Many topics, no end. I'd like to see some results already from the primaries. I'd like to see some of the old-line Republicans take a walk. Alleged Riverdale bomb plotter symptoms are suspicious, says a court-appointed shrink. Now, of course, they're couching the word Riverdale bomber. That means Muslim. Whenever you see alleged bomber and anything connected. One of the alleged Riverside bomb plotters may be channeling Keanu Reeves in a bid to blow off his trial. A jailhouse shrink testified this morning that LaGuerre Payan has reported seeing hallucinations inside the Metropolitan Correctional Center, but answered, I don't know to nearly every question when a psych asked him a question in July. When asked if sleep medications were helping him rest, psychologist Elisa Miller said Payan replied, this is the Matrix, isn't it? Well, whatever. Okay. This morning he was not responsive and urinated on the floor of his cell when a lieutenant went to get him. You know who he is, don't you? Who's this guy? Who is this guy, the alleged Riverdale bomber? He wanted to blow up a synagogue because he was a practitioner of the religion of peace. He hated Jews. We don't know where he got it from. We don't know how he learned it. We don't know where he got it from. We don't know how he became that way. It has nothing to do with his religion. He's an anomaly. They're all peaceful. But this man was a Muslim, and he hated Jews and wanted to kill them. It's funny the word Muslim isn't mentioned once in the story. Shocking, actually, that they didn't mention the word Muslim. They're saying alleged Riverdale bomb plotter symptoms are suspicious, says shrink. The man wanted to blow up synagogues because he hated Jews. And we don't know how he got there. We have no idea how he learned it. We have no idea how a man of such a peaceful religion could come to hate someone from another religion. It's just not in their holy book. It's never discussed in their mosques to hate anyone. They never say a negative word about Jews or Christians or Americans itself in the holy places that they attend. We have no idea how this came to him. And so maybe he really is psychotic. He could be a one in a billion. There's no question he could be a one in a billion job. He's the outlying statistic amongst the practitioners of the religion of peace. Ask Janet Napolitano. She'll tell you she eats spaghetti and meatballs. Did you hear that one, that scream today? Here is the head of the Department of Homeland Security, which I cover, by the way, in Trickle Up Poverty, a whole chapter devoted to the shenanigans of this department. I've met some agents, by the way, who are really tough guys and great men, and I got to say that right off the bat, they are responsible for rounding up the illegal alien murderers in San Francisco, and guess what? They told me every time they arrest these guys, it goes up a few levels and they're dismissed. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, to the police departments around America, all functioning like this, by and large. So here you have Janet Napolitano put in there as a stooge front by Obama, the head of Homeland Security. The least qualified person he ever could have found on a federal level would be Janet Napolitano. She has failed us on every attempted terrorist event over the last year and a half. She's failed to stop it before it happened. She still has her job because, as you well know, we have the first Muslim president in history. and he's soft on this kind of thing. So he put the perfect person in the perfect place. And she goes on CNN, instead of answering questions about her failures or what she's going to do to protect us, this and that, listen to what she's asked and what she answers.
If you had to pick a favorite food that you probably shouldn't eat, but do anyway, what is it?
Spaghetti and meatballs. I love it.
From Arizona. That's a surprising... That's true. I'm sorry. They're sort of a mix.
This is what passes for news on CNN. This is exactly what the ex-Soviet Union was famous for, which was non-news, posing as news. And so I renamed CNN, GNN today, Government News Network. I don't know if it's been used before, but it's certainly appropriate. Because in 1998, a certain individual named Michael Savage gave a speech before the Commonwealth Club entitled, Beware the Government Media Complex. Little known speech. Except to those who attended the speech. I don't even know if it's on YouTube, but it was a great speech. And I warned America about what was coming with the media and the government. And how they became one and the same, almost a seamless propaganda arm for the Democrat Party in that regard. So there it is, 1-800-449-8255, all the stories that we're talking about. Let's take some callers on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Mark, thank you for calling the program. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to comment about Kerouac. I remember an apocryphal story I read when I researched him. Of and this goes with the mosque, of how deeply in love with America he was. Story of somehow there was a tattered or a flag, an American flag on the ground somewhere, and nobody was kind of respecting it, nobody was paying attention to it. It was on the ground. And what sticks out in my mind is he picked it up and folded it, almost like a Boy Scout with reverence for it.
Right.
So that right there always stuck out in my mind of how I read about
right.
him.
Right. Look, he was known as a beat writer, but the fact is his great books, well, went well beyond the limited school called the beat literature. That most of them were drug addicts and losers. He was a giant on a Whitman-esque level. And the fact is that he still taught in universities, but the problem is the perv professors who teach him twist his legacy and try to turn him into something he never was. You hit it right on the head. He was patriotic. Loved America, quite Republican, supported the Vietnam War, supported Nixon, and hated Allen Ginsberg and that other school of communist perverts, to his dying day hated them. And that's not taught in the universities today. It's very important that people know this, Mark.
Yes, it is. And I found it fascinating how he could be, you know, he just kind of was this, even in the Beatnik movement, which was kind of almost a rebellious movement, that he rebelled against the... You know, the rebellion.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. A party of one like Michael Savage rebelled against the Republican Party before anybody else. You know, I told you I was influenced by Kerouac, not so much politically as much as in other ways, which is to go out on your own road and follow your own road no matter what it, you know, wherever it leads you. So here we are. We're all on our own roads. And we go to Sacramento. I mean, you want to talk about... I got a lot of callers on Kerouac. It's surprising because I didn't know many of you read him anymore. I figured I'd pull this out of the, you know, Tuesday's supposed to be book day, literature day. Can we play one more Kerouac, a bad haiku with a saxophone riff? Go ahead.
Beautiful young girls running up the library steps with shorts on.
All right, that's what you call crap. Okay, crapola. I mean, he's not going to be known for the haiku, which I say haiku is like, haiku is to literature. Let's say Americans interpreting the Japanese haiku is to literature what the Big Mac is to a steak. That's a haiku. So I'm going to say it again, play the saxophone. The American interpretation of the haiku is to literature what the Big Mac is to a well-done steak. All right, I'm having a little fun. So he's not going to be remembered for these stupid haikus. It was like a hula hoop of the literary world at the time. They all tried haikus with a certain number of, you know, syllables and whatever. And the fact is, he's not going to be known for that. But his books like On the Road, The Subterraneans, I forget some of the others that he wrote. I never forget when he was a lookout in Colorado and a lookout in a mountain, you know, and he freaked out. Incidentally, he hated a lot of the things he did on the road. As I found out, the road is a horrible place. Incidentally, I mean, don't glorify being on the road. You know, all my life, in many ways, I've been a wanderer and on the road. Even when I'm in a radio studio, I'm wandering and I'm on the road all alone, incidentally. Don't think that there's a big, big convention of talk show hosts who love each other. None of them came to my aid except a few people from the network that I work with. None of them came to my aid with this band in Britain, which is a shocker, except if you know that they're just Republicans in drag. I mean, most of the conservatives are Republicans along the lines of the guy from the Weekly Standard. They're exactly mainstream Republican types. Doesn't make them evil. Doesn't make them evil at all. It just makes them what they are. And so I've always represented something beyond that, and I'm glad to see that there's a growing third-party movement in the country called the Tea Party. I didn't found it, but I know I had a lot to do with some of the ideas in that regard. God bless the people who have the energy, the will to run these things. I don't. But the fact is that I remember that he was once a lookout on top of a mountain, Kerouac was, in Colorado, and frankly he had almost a psychotic episode from loneliness, of being alone in that, like a fire lookout. He hated it, and he had to come down from that mountain. And I remember when I was a youngster and went on a trip to Europe with some friends on the motor vessel Waterman, the MV Waterman. We went for our wild trip to Europe, and we stayed up all night partying, drinking, whatever we had to do, slept during the day, just partied all night. We had a great time on the way to Europe. But I'll never forget, I told the story once maybe, I was very young, I don't know, just out of college. It was the big trip to Europe thing. So we're on this ex-troop transport. Six of us in a room down in steerage somewhere. Who knows what? It was all like that. And there was this old man, like 85. He was a Dutchman, and he was blind. I'll never forget his eyes to the day I die. And I looked, I don't know, I didn't want to be with the guys partying anymore. I was always like, what am I really doing? I got to stop. I got to think. So I went to talk to the old man, and I looked at him. And I said, I don't remember his name, old Dutchman. I looked at him. I said, what's the meaning of life? I was one of those kids. You know, what's the meaning of life? I was looking for it wherever I went. I could talk to a Bowery bum and ask him a question, because truthfully, I found out years later that there are religious teachings that say that every man has something to teach you, which is true, by the way. If you have the time and the patience, there's something in everyone that can be gotten from them that's it's a nugget of genius. And that could be that even a drunk bum in the street could have something to teach you. And I've always lived that in some way. Not so much today, because I'm more isolated than I was. So I asked the old man, I looked down in his blind blue eyes as he's sitting in a lower bunk looking up, staring at me with the blind blue unseeing eyes. Old man, says the young man on the road, what's the meaning of life? And the old man looks up from the lower berth to the young man and he says, what's the meaning of life? What's the meaning of life? Why, I guess... you're born holding it and you die holding it, said the old man. Play the saxophone, because to this day, my friend, I thought it was one of the funniest things ever anyone had ever said to me. So in other words, the young man wanted some profundity from the old man, but the old man worked him over and gave him a joke. Because the answer is, it's all a joke. I'll be right back. Savage.
If you had to pick a favorite food that you probably shouldn't eat, but do anyway, what is it?
Spaghetti and meatballs.
In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age.
Died of old age. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. remember that, the myth? I remember when I was reading man magazines when I was a kid. You know, you always wanted to know all the secrets. When we were 14, was where it was, how it worked, what it did. It was like Viagra for women. And every kid 14 years old that I knew wanted to get some. You know, crazy enough to begin with, okay? They needed Spanish Fly on top of it all. It was a myth. spaghetti and meatballs. That's what I'm going to have tonight. I'm actually going to have after the show tonight. It'll be late. I mean, it's already, East Coast is so different for me. I'm going to have I forgot what I'm going to have. What do I know what I'm going to have? This came to me from Peter. Kerouac was a fire lookout one summer at Mount Baker in Washington State. Right, not Colorado. Thanks, Peter. I think it was Desolation Angels where he wrote about this experience. We have one more who is a friend of mine, who is a talk show host, I believe a liberal talk show host, who loves my show, and she wrote, one of the Smithsonians had an exhibit of snapshots by Ginsberg, and I went to see it Labor Day weekend. I presume that the people going to see it would all be old folks like us. I was amazed. About 75% of the people at the exhibit were in their 20s and 30s, and they were just riveted. They called it Ginsberg's photography, but it was really just the snapshots. Interesting. And I just learned that Francis Ford Coppola is doing a movie called On the Road based on Kerouac's book. My guess is, before I see any of it, is that he will paint, since Coppola is a far-left radical, Coppola will paint Kerouac as a degenerate, left-wing, anti-American, flag-burning, communist deviant. Okay. There's more now. More about the beatniks. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm going to get into this anymore, but Peter, thank you. It's unbelievable. I mean, I knew a lot of these bums. Most of them were no good from the top to the bottom. No good from the top to the bottom. Awful people. Awful people. They slept with their friends' wives. They tried to sleep with their friends' daughters. They robbed money from each other. They were the lowest bums I've ever met in my life. All of them. Every last one of them. One of the old characters still creeps around the streets of North Beach posing as a nice guy. Oh, my goodness. What a cheap bum he is. But I ain't even going to mention his name. No one cares about him. No one ever heard of Mr. Spaghetti anymore. Should I tell you about Mr. Spaghetti, a personal story about the far left Mr. Spaghetti of San Francisco's North Beach, who walks around slumped up, pretending he's one of the people, down with the left, down against the man, against the country, Mr. Left Winger? Hey, man. Hey, Mr. Spaghetti in North Beach, who owns that bookstore where you sell left-wing literature only, and you have big signs up there in your window on Columbus Avenue telling people to turn left. Did you tell them about your bank account and your Parisian holdings? Did you tell them about who owns that valuable piece of property, Mr. Communist, on Columbus Avenue? Did you tell them you're really a secret capitalist in disguise? Click, click, bongo, bang, bang. But more importantly, Mr. Spaghetti, in that bookstore on Columbus Avenue in San Francisco, who I know going back many a year, who poses as a left winger, who'd run out of restaurants when the tip came, didn't leave a dime for the waitresses, Mr. Down, with stupid children who think you're a nice guy. Threw him out when he got him, Mr. Spaghetti. Is that in part of your teachings when you go around to the universities, acting like the old college professor of goodness? That should be in your authorized autobiography, Mr. Spaghetti, but I don't want to talk about you much anymore. Click, click, Coney Island of your hind, because you never had a mind. You only had a hind, Coney Island of the hind, which you stole from a record jacket in France, it is alleged, on YouTube. Never wrote an original line in your life. You aped the others, and you got away with it pretty good until Michael Savage arrived on the scene in North Beach and exposed you for who you aren't. And he wrote that he's just a clever businessman in disguise. And Ginsberg wrote back, no, you're all wrong. And I wrote back, the eye that alters, alters all. Never spoke to any of them ever again, Mr. Blakestein.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
even liberal France sees the Muslim threat. Now, why would I say that? Is that just hyperbole? Well, here's the headline from the Associated Press today. French Senate passes ban of full Muslim veils. French senators voted overwhelmingly for a bill banning the burqa-style Islamic veil everywhere, from post offices to streets, and a final step toward making it a law. The French Senate voted 2-4-6-1 Tuesday in favor of the bill, which has already passed in the lower chamber of the National Assembly. The fact of the matter is, this is a liberal nation, European nation, France, and they said no to the veil. They understand the Muslim threat. Now let's look at our country. Article today, New York Post, about the Ground Zero Mosque by Michael Goodwin, called Extremist Lion in Moderate Lamb's Clothing. I couldn't agree, you know, even more than this. I'm going to read a piece of it. There's a story about a Middle East zookeeper who insists he can get the lion and lamb to lie down together each night. An incredulous visitor asks how. Easy, the zookeeper says. I just bring in a new lamb each morning. Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf reminds me of the zookeeper. I'm not sure if he would get the joke or even realize it is a joke, and that's the problem. It's also getting too late to care. If we still have to guess at his true sympathies, he forfeits any claim to our trust. Now remember who he's talking about. The so-called imam, who I will not call imam. I'm sick of it. Okay, I'll have other words for him. Let's just call him Rauf. His public comments sometimes favor the lion and sometimes the lamb. Even when he's on his best behavior, as he was yesterday at the Council on Foreign Relations, Rauf raises more suspicions about himself and his plan to put a mosque near Ground Zero. He's refused to call Hamas a terror organization. He said the United States was an accomplice to 9/11. His elastic definition of who is an extremist makes his words meaningless. Still, there's a way to find out who he really is. Let's call it the reasonable man test. If he means what he says about healing the breach of 9/11, and if it's true he wouldn't have started his plan had he known how much trouble it would cause, his next move is obvious. He'll announce he's going to find another spot for the mosque. He hinted he might, but he's done that before. He also said the world will be watching what we do here, a paler version of his earlier warnings that blocking the mosque could lead to more violence. But the point has been made. Now listen to this. The most revealing moment came when Council President Richard Haass asked the overarching question of why Muslims make up nearly all of the world's most dangerous terrorists. Rauf choked on the answer. He talked about a witch's brew of political and religious issues, but started with a predictable non sequitur, the Israeli-Palestinian standoff. Then it was off to citing American troops in Muslim lands and the alienation of Muslim minorities in Europe and the United States. He made a vague reference to church-state issues in Muslim nations, and that was it. Not once did Rauf express any gratitude for the millions of Muslims liberated from their tyrannical co-religionists by the West, or for the sacrifice of American blood and treasure. Nor did he make a serious effort to explain the habits of suicide bombers, beheadings, and terror attacks. In that sense, Rauf fits the profile of the typical nonviolent Muslim. Listen to this. Despite his self-description of a moderate seeking peace, virtually everything he says and does suggests he nonetheless subscribes to the false narrative of Islam being under attack by a conspiracy in the West. That is the narrative that fuels the bloody jihad movement. But as former British Prime Minister Tony Blair says, it is also a narrative that has a broader reach than we think. The more Rauf talks, the more he shows a troubling soft spot for the narrative. Indeed, Rauf and his supporters appear to have set a trap. They plan the most provocative act possible in the shadow of Ground Zero and instantly declare all opponents guilty of hateful discrimination against Muslims. By his terms, opponents could be either bigots or patsies, nothing else. Traveling to the Persian Gulf recently, on the taxpayer's dime no less, this Rauf even said all the attention over his mosque is a sign of success. Well, that depends on how you define success. Fortunately, it's clear how he defines it. So let's go back. Even liberal France sees the Muslim threat. And now we have an extremist lion in moderate lamb's clothing. Most Americans know this, but not the idiots like Bloomberg. Not the idiots like the government itself. Not the idiots like Big Sis Napolitano. Not the morons at CNN, MSNBC, and the other useless outlets for government propaganda. To them, it's all about Islamophobia. These are important stories for you to pay much attention to. There's a bum in San Francisco who calls himself a poet. What he really is a real estate empire, a builder, who wrote some garbage in the 50s, which he copied from a French record jacket. And everyone in the college, a great genius, beatnik, this, that, bookstore owner, commie bookstore owner. When I knew him, when I got here in the 70s, we used to hang out a little bit together. If we went into one of the local restaurants, let's say it was a North Beach kind of family style where everyone, you get the soup tureen and you get the three courses, and then the check comes. Whenever the tip arrived, he ran out of the restaurant putting down to the exact penny, all the money, the exact to the penny what he owed. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's been a lot of talk about another stimulus package coming soon. Economy does not seem to have been helped by the last $1 trillion the Obama administration threw at it. So the idiots say it's time to throw more money at it. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Alan Reynolds. Talk about his recent article entitled Snake Oil Stimulus that was in the New York Post. Alan Reynolds, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again today. I was a little inspired by an article that Laura Tyson wrote in the New York Times, and she was at that time considered a leading contender to be the new head of the Council of Economic Advisers, just as shortly before she was thought to be a contender for the Office of Management and Budget. Neither turned out, which is probably just as well from my point of view. In any case, she had tried to make the case that the economy had done well because of the stimulus program, that it had helped boost the economy in 2009. But now, because the GDP figure looked weak for the second quarter, she said we need more. In other places, she said we need another $1 trillion. She didn't put a number on it this time, an extra $1 trillion spent out.
Another trillion? How could they actually say the last stimulus did anything?
You know, everybody always refers to some simulations from an econometric model, usually Mark Zandi's, of Moody's economy.com. The model says it worked, therefore it must have worked. But when we go look at the actual numbers, it's very hard to find any benefit from whatever it is they were doing. What they're mostly doing is spending transfer payments, like unemployment benefits and refundable tax credits, which are just a check that's sent out to people, and it just doesn't really show up in the data. And so she doesn't really make her case, and yet, on the other hand, she has this, basically it's a thing of, since it didn't work so far, we need a lot more of the same. And that's always makes me rather suspicious, and so I go through what I think happened.
Well, your article actually says they're looking at unemployment the wrong way.
Well, the one really significant factor we can associate with the 2009 stimulus bill was that it greatly extended the duration of unemployment benefits. You know, typically those go 26 weeks. In past bad recessions, like 81, 82, we would extend benefits as much as a year, about 52 weeks. This time we went out to 79 and then 99 weeks. In other words, almost 2 years of benefits. And there's just all kinds of evidence, some of it from economists in the Obama administration, like Larry Summers, Alan Krueger, that says when you extend the benefits for unemployment, the unemployment rate will go up because people will spend longer between jobs. And so they keep showing up in the monthly survey. They're not getting off the dole. We're adding new people and the old people are staying on. It's neither bad nor good. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. It might be a nice thing to do, but you should expect the unemployment rate to be higher.
Well, were there any nations that did not do this kind of unemployment stimulus?
Germany's an obvious example. The unemployment's come down quite rapidly, even though their GDP growth, economic growth, has been no faster, and in fact, until recently, was slower than in the United States. Why is that? Well, Germany didn't do this. They didn't extend. They got tighter with unemployment benefits, and they did some subsidizing of jobs. That is, but they didn't do this subsidizing of not work. Of being jobless. I also point out that this unemployment problem is highly concentrated in a few states this time. That's not usually the case.
Well, why the concentration of unemployment?
To some extent, an awful lot of that is in the states that had the biggest housing booms and therefore the biggest housing busts, and that's, of course, California, Nevada, and Florida. There's some other states, too, but basically for 42 of the U.S. states, the unemployment rate in 2010 or 2009 never got nearly as high as it did in previous recessions, such as the 1976 recession and the 1982 recession. So that's a different kind of a deal, and it may not be something that is easily amenable to some national fix like trying to get people to borrow and spend more, which is what stimulus is all about. These folks really are in a position where they've got to hunker down a bit, save more, borrow less, and retrench, what's called deleveraging a little bit, because some folks got too deeply in debt in the mortgage market and basically have to work their way out of it.
Well, why is this recovery slower than past recessions?
Two things. First of all, we shouldn't always assume that governments know what they're doing and the governments can fix your problem here. The 81-82 recession was so much different because we went into that with horrific inflation. Even in 79, the inflation rate, and even if you put aside energy, the non-energy inflation rate was 11% in 1979. So the Fed first tightens up a little in 1980, then eases up a little bit. By the time Ronald Reagan took office in 81, they put the federal funds rate up to 19%. Well, of course, that killed the economy. But it did, you know, eventually get inflation down. The Fed backed off eventually. And then we finally had the tax cuts cutting in 83. Unfortunately, they were timed to be phased in gradually. And that, of course, was a mistake, and it's a mistake we've made repeatedly.
Hmm.
In 2001, we phased in, didn't really have the tax cut until 2003. In the 1986 tax reform, went in faster, but wasn't really fully implemented till 88. Anyway, that's what happened pretty much. We've got so when we get to 81, we've got the Fed backing off, and we've got a very substantial reduction in marginal tax rates, and the economy took off like crazy. In 2003, we had a substantial reduction in marginal tax rates, and the economy did pretty well, at least compared to what it had done before. And the same thing happened, of course, in the 20s and in the 60s. They obviously don't buy the tax argument. They're not looking at what worked, what's worked in the past in this country and many other countries. They are basing it on a theory that government spending stimulates demand and government spending stimulates private spending. In other words, if they borrow it, it's like it's borrowed money is free money.
True.
That really isn't the case. The government basically can only spend what Danny DeVito called OPM, which means other people's money. And when the government spends other people's money, it looks really good to the person who's receiving the spending, but not so good to the people we're forgetting about, which is taxpayers. Those are the other people, either current and future taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The government's debt is our debt. We are being burdened by it. We feel burdened by it. We're afraid of it. It makes people retrench and hold up and be careful. So also do these constant changes in regulations. Financial regulations. Nobody knows quite what that's all about, so banks are just naturally inclined to be cautious and prudent, which is a good thing, but maybe too much caution right now is dangerous. We don't know what the health care bill is going to cost, so small businesses are fearing it's going to be very expensive. We're going to mandate better benefits to people, and that's going to cost more money. And just a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear that the government is spending too much, regulating too much, and it ultimately will be taxing too much because this stuff isn't free.
Do you see any light at the end of this tunnel?
Well, I hate to be partisan about it, but most of the light is coming from the Republican side and from guys like Paul Ryan and Mitch Daniels and some other folks who are perfectly aware that government spending is out of hand. You know, government spending as a share of GDP increased by 4 percentage points in a single year in 2009. I can't find any time that ever happened before. It didn't even happen under FDR. I
mean, unbelievable.
It's just a really incredible increase in spending. And if we get back to kind of normal, back to instead of it's almost 25% of GDP, if you get back to 20, 21, I mean, which is where we were before, 2008, 2007, an awful lot of good things start to happen that allows the government to cut taxes instead of raise them. And it allows, for at the very least, for them to give the private sector a little elbow room instead of crowding us out.
Well, what can the average person do?
Well, you know, the economy is us, the people. People tend to think of it as some kind of a machine. You hear things, oh, we have to jumpstart it, start it like it's a car or poke it or something like that. It's really just millions of people trying to do better than they did before, and they're trading with each other. They're working hard. They're investing. The U.S. economy is very resilient. The U.S. economy is by no means dead. It's just overburdened at the present time, and we need to lift that burden so that it can do what it always did do, which it has done in the past, which is to be a entrepreneurial engine of strong economic growth and progress that is the admiration of the world. We were before, we will be again, but it's going to take a little different approach than what we've had since 2009.
Alan Reynolds, thanks again for being on my show, The Savage Nation.
I really enjoyed talking with you and hope we can do it again soon.
With no evidence that the first round of stimulus did anything but make the friends of the Obama administration even richer, genital washing in South Africa, anyone? They're ready to throw even more money at the economy, even though it looks like they have no idea where the original $1 trillion went.
Savage.
Now, we have sound today about Ralph speaking at the Council on Foreign Relations on the Ground Zero Mosque controversy. You have to hear this stuff, and I have it, and we've played a little of it. We're going to play a little bit more for you on the Savage Nation. Very, very important. Some other news stories you may want to pay attention to. Bulletproof vest mogul found guilty of all 17 counts. This is a sick story. After 2 weeks of deliberations, a jury found former DHB Industries CEO David Brooks guilty of looting his own company and duping shareholders. Now, remember what this prince did for a living. He made bulletproof vests for the military. Brooks faced 17 charges, including conspiracy to commit securities wire, mail fraud, obstruction of justice, and insider trading. He faces up to life in prison on the charges. The 8-month trial was one of the longest in Eastern District federal court history. Prosecutors said Brooks used $6 million in company money to fund his lavish lifestyle, which included a 2005 multimillion-dollar Rainbow Room bash where some actor called 50 Cent, I never heard of him, Tom Petty, never heard of him, and Aerosmith, an old hack, serenaded his idiot daughter. This jerk famously wore a $100,000 diamond-encrusted belt buckle. Brooks spent his millions on horse races, horse racing, I guess horses, prostitutes, shopping sprees, trips to the south of France, and luxury cars. Well, what did he actually do? He bought clothing with it, you know, whatever. Authorities allege that Brooks pushed the stock from a paltry $2 a share in early 2003 to almost $20 a share in 2004. Him and his partner cleared $190 million, with $185 million of it going to Brooke after dumping their inflated shares. The stock plummeted after their exit, and shareholders were wiped out. He faces life in prison. That's America today, where the streets are paved by yoles. Now, here's another one for those of you who love Obama and Bonnie Frank and Nancy Pelosi, and you thought the stimulus money was for you. You better get ready. The federal government spent $800,000 of economic stimulus money on African genital washing program. What is that? The NIH, the National Institute of So-Called Mental Health, spent $823,000 of economic stimulus funds in 2009 on a study by perverts at UCLA to teach uncircumcised African men how to wash their genitals after having sex. I swear to God, I am not making this up. Listen to what they said. It's called Community-Based HIV VCT South Africa. What does that mean? The aim of the proposed study is to evaluate the feasibility and acceptability of a postcoital male genital hygiene procedure, which participants will be asked to practice immediately postcoitus or at least 12 hours after. So in other words, sick, degenerate, perverted scientists got $823,000 to go to South Africa, probably to have sex with men in South Africa, and then tell their partners to wash themselves. It's unbelievable to me. that they're not in jail. CNS News asked the lead investigator, Thomas Coates, if he thinks that the money was well spent. He said the Census Bureau says the median household income in the U.S. is $52,000. How would you explain to the average American mom and dad who make $52,000 a year that taxing them to pay for this grant was justified? Coates was unavailable for comment. He was directed to ask grant-related questions of his assistant, who did not respond. The National Institute of So-Called Mental Health also declined to respond. That's your government under Obama. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. So what I want to do today for you is talk for a minute about books, because I'm going to show you some things about books that you may not, I think you'll find them interesting. Let's put it to you that way. I can't really, you know, give you a big overview of why I'm doing this. If I can only find what I'm looking for, here it is. We're going to talk today about Illusions of Grandeur by people like, Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg is an example of Illusions of Grandeur, for example, okay? You'll see why I say that in a minute. Illusions of Grandeur. And Mayor Bloomberg is perhaps the greatest exemplar of such illusions. Then we're going to talk about allusions and illusions on the Savage Nation. Now, I'm not trying to turn this into a college course, but many of you need a break from the news when you turn on the Savage Nation. You like the stories, you like the this, you like the that, and where I go with things, you never know where it's going to go and such. But I want to talk about illusions and allusions, and I want to start with illusions, most notably Mayor Bloomberg and politics, meaning Bloomberg and the mosque. A writer for WorldNet Daily asked me to send two lines about Bloomberg and the mosque. It was Aaron Klein, and I said, here's what I sent them a long paragraph, and here's what I wrote. I said, Bloomberg's expansionist business interests in the Middle East are well known. That he would spit in the face of the memories of the victims of Islamic terrorism by not only supporting the extremists and agitators who want to build a victory mosque at Ground Zero is one insult. Another is Bloomberg calling those who oppose this desecration of what is essentially a cemetery various other insulting names, goes to further show the callousness and greed of this naked opportunist. Further, Bloomberg is so out of touch with reality that he actually believes his fifth-grade concept of tolerance and his sing-songy sermons during his Ramadan PR event. Now, I believe that since he believes his own concepts of tolerance and his sermons that he gave at the Ramadan event at Gracie Mansion, he actually believes that this backing the mosque has made him immensely popular throughout America. So popular that he actually will run for the presidency. Now, what this cocoon man does not yet know is that west of the Hudson River, he is despised and mocked. That's what I sent him. So I thought I would share that with you. And now on to, we've gone from illusions of grandeur, example being Mayor Bloomberg. He's not the only politician who has illusions of grandeur. I think many in the media suffer it. Perhaps some could accuse me of suffering from illusions of grandeur as well. And I accept that. I think part and parcel of this business is that unless you have some sort of illusions of self-aggrandizement, you cannot do politics or the media. You can't do it. There's absolutely no way you can't do this with an oversized ego and illusions of grandeur. The difference is that some of us retain some perspective of the realities outside of our own ego, and some of us do not. And those of us who do retain a conceptual differential between, let's say, our own self-importance and what's really going on in the world, I think do a pretty good job of it. And those of us who can't separate our oversized self-image with the world do a terrible job at the media and at politics. Now I want to talk about allusions. Now, what do I mean by allusions? Well, allusions in Western literature. Don't turn the show off because you think you're back in high school. You're just beginning your learning. And I know many people are going to enjoy this. I'm going to give you an example. Let's start with the book title that many of you may still remember. It's called The Sun Also Rises by Ernest Hemingway, one of the great novelists of all time. And the title of the novel, The Sun Also Rises, where does it come from? The title comes from the Old Testament, the Bible, Ecclesiastes 1:5, where it's written, "The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose." So Hemingway was a good Midwestern boy who grew up going to church, who had a good solid education, not only in high school, which was greater than most of the college educations today, but biblical education as well, and he used that to his advantage as a great novelist. I'll give you another example that of a title that goes back quite a ways. Here is, for example, where's the second one? I'm trying to find the second biblical reference if I can. I don't know if I can find the second one exactly and immediately. I'll just read them as I have them. Okay, so "The Sun Also Rises" comes from the Bible. Now let's look at the next title, "The Day of the Locust." Did you ever hear "The Day of the Locust" by Nathaniel West? It was a 1939 novel set in Hollywood, California during the Great Depression. And it depicted the alienation and desperation of a group of people who exist at the fringes of the movie industry. The title, "The Day of the Locust," is likely a biblical allusion to certain passages in the Old Testament. The most famous literary or historical reference to locusts is in the book of Exodus in the Bible, in which God sends a plague of locusts to the Pharaoh of Egypt as retribution for refusing to free the enslaved Jews. Millions of locusts swarm over the lush fields of Egypt, destroying its food supply. Nathaniel West's use of the locust in his title brings up images of destruction and a land, Hollywood, stripped bare of anything green and living. And that's another one that may be tied back to the Bible in the Day of the Locust. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Big Sis Napolitano says we better get used to the current immigration system until Congress fixes it.
Your voice is your vote, man. That's where it begins and ends. It doesn't end. But it doesn't go as far as it needs to without the vote, because the vote is the currency that this town lives on.
In other words, illegals being allowed to use the American system for free and not being held accountable, not deporting them.
For Congress to act, the members of both parties must be ready to sit down and negotiate not just a bill, but to negotiate an immigration system that is firm, that is fair, and that meets the hallmarks of the American
tradition. How about a secure southern border, sis?
We are a nation of immigrants. We are a nation of laws. The president has reaffirmed that commitment. These problems that we're currently having are not going to simply disappear. They will not ultimately be fixed until the Congress acts.
How about getting to know Big Sis a bit better? Listen to this.
What most surprised you when you came from Arizona to Washington, D.C.?
Don't mention Arizona and what she's done to this country. Go on.
You mean besides the climate, besides the fact that, what's fascinating about Washington, D.C. is you do have people from all over the country here, and they bring immense talent and skills, and they all have to be blended somehow into a national government. So it's a fascinating place.
Oh, that crack about the weather. Which weather do you like best, D.C. or Arizona?
Depends on what season we're talking about.
Exactly.
But what is Big Sis's favorite food? That's important for you to know.
If you had to pick a favorite food that you probably shouldn't eat, but do anyway, what is it?
No, you're not going to believe this.
Spaghetti and meatballs. I love it.
They're not the fluffy American meatballs.
Arizona, that's a surprising.
They're the hard, small Swedish meatballs that she's come to favor.
Well, that's true. I'm sorry. I forgot. They're sort of a mix.
And now here's the clown, Jerry Brown. The clown, Jerry Brown.
She stops at nothing. She's even got plain lying about it. Yeah. You know, did you see that? When they said, I raise taxes, it's a lie.
Clown Jerry Brown.
The LA Times said that. But they'll say anything. And that's why we have to have our own truth squad to get the word out, okay?
Wow.
You remember, right? this state. So let's be clear about that. Thank you.
The clown Jerry Brown. Wants to be California governor again, attacking Bill Clinton. Jerry, let's be clear. Bill is a liar, but let's also be clear that neither you nor Clinton are really eligible to be hold higher office at this point. Hey, look at all the uncertainty and instability that Obama's creating. It's no wonder that the economy is shaky. Gold prices have been going through the roof, and that's why you should contact my great advertisers at Swiss America. Obama might be laying the economy low, but gold is defying that trend. Go to the best name in gold, SwissAmerica.com. So I'm going to just continue and show you some more illusions, or shall I say allusions, in Western literature. We talked about the sun also rises from the Bible. We talked about the day of the locust, which is probably biblical in its reference. How about the title For Whom the Bell Tolls, Hemingway's novel about the Spanish Civil War, is an allusion, not illusion, an allusion to a passage from Devotions Upon Emergent Occasions by English poet John Donne. Now, John Donne became an Anglican priest in 1615, and here's what he wrote. No man is an island entire of itself. Each is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thine own or of thine friends were. Each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. So Hemingway took that, and he wrote For Whom the Bell Tolls. How about the book The Winter of Our Discontent, published in 1961, written by John Steinbeck, his last novel? Title, reference to the line, Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by the son of York, from William Shakespeare's Richard III. The Grapes of Wrath, where'd that come from? Another great title. Many of you have some memory of it. The Grapes of Wrath is a reference to the Battle Hymn of the Republic by Julia Ward Howe. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Now, what is that all about? These lyrics, to me, refer to the biblical passage in Revelation 25, which is, And in the eyes of the hungry there is a growing wrath. In the souls of the people, the grapes of wrath are filling and growing heavy for the vintage. Wow, does that sound like America today? You hear this? And in the eyes of the hungry, there is a growing wrath. In the souls of the people, the grapes of wrath are filling and growing heavy for the vintage. So it's not that people are starving in America. What they're starving for is truth. They're starving for leadership. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the Gulf, and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. I began as a writer, not as an orator. I have succeeded beyond my wildest dreams, both as an author and as an orator. And I want to thank my loyal audience for that. And it's not just hokum for me to say it. I'm not selling anything right now. I began as a writer. I then went into the field of speaking, public speaking, radio, 1994. And I told you that the books I write are still largely in print. Most of the early ones still are. I call them Persian miniatures. It's a strange phenomenon for me to be using a phrase such as Persian miniature, but that's when Persia was a great nation not ruled by Islamists. But I have written Persian miniatures from the beginning. My first book, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, about Native American lore, medicinal plants and such, is still in print, I believe. But you know, my fondest book, the book I like the most, is called Healing Children Naturally. I wrote it in 1980. I had a terrible history with it. A major New York publisher practically stole it out from under my feet, blah, blah. So I reprinted it myself. It's only available on michaelsavage.com, but you got to hear this. There's a point to this side story. I just went on Amazon to see how Trickle Up Poverty was doing. I can't help it. And it says other books by Michael Savage, and I go to Healing Children Naturally. I say, how could they be selling it? I'm the only one who has the book. Did someone rip off my book and offset it? They're selling used copies of Healing Children Naturally for upwards of $115 a piece. I swear to God. I said, how is this possible? $115 for a book that I have on my own website for $20? Used copies are going for $100. Somebody likes what I'm doing out there. And as I have to say to you again, I want to thank you, by the way, for giving me this pleasure at this age of my life. Healing Children Naturally, 7 new from $43, used from $23. Amazing to me, just amazing. Another little story on michaelsavage.com. Sweden launches chlamydia Monday. I'll leave it at that. Sweden launches chlamydia Monday. And this is what Big Chin Pelosi did with your money. Shame on you, Nancy Pelosi. Shame on you. Shame on you, what you've done to this country.
Savage.